Welcome. Thanks for tuning into the Vigilance Press podcast. This is your host, Mike Lafferty. And this week we're talking about the recent Vigilant Press releases for ICONS. That's Vigilance Force and Eugenics Brigade. And the next week we hope to have Crown Guard out. And these are three character portfolios set in World War II, which we thought was kind of an underserved niche in Supers Gaming. And with us we have Chuck Rice, who was the man who thought up these groups back in the day when he wrote, that was Blood and Vigilance, right, Chuck?
They actually predate that. They go back to the original Vigilance, which was the first book I ever wrote in 2001.
Oh, wow. What system was that for?
Vigilance. It was a D20 Supers adapted from 3.0.
Wow, back in the day. Is that on RPG Now anywhere, or?
I have discontinued it because it's fairly primitive. It was the first book I ever wrote, and I laid it out myself, and it's, as I said, D&D 3.0, so the mechanics predate D20 Modern 3.5. Pretty much everything except spycraft.
Okay. So it's kind of old and steam-powered is what you're saying.
That is correct.
Okay. All right. Well, hey, not to slight you, but I also want to introduce James before we get too far into this, and that's James Dossey, who was with us last podcast for the really well-received Mutants and Masterminds demo we did. And James was the artist on Eugenics Brigade, along with Dan Hauser, and he drew... let's see, Brass Knuckles and the Jetpack Guys, the Uberfall Commandos, and Krieghund. So, hey, James, how you doing?
Hey, great, Mike. Great to be here.
Hey, glad to have you. Now, before we were getting ready to tell Chuck an interesting story, you and Dan were at Gen Con with this portfolio, and you're working on lots of stuff for me, so you had had lots of Nazi superhero images in your portfolio at Gen Con.
Well, supervillains, right?
Yeah, sorry. There is a good distinction to make.
Yeah, very good distinction, an important one that I had to make several times at the con. It was kind of funny because a lot of the folks, I don't know how many of the Gen Con folks recognize me, but I've been to a couple of conventions since starting work with Dan, and since a pile of the projects Dan and I did together were for you, it's like all of a sudden I have this string of Nazi imagery that appeared in my portfolio. One particularly amusing anecdote, this gentleman stopped by our table at Gen Con, and Dan was constantly apologizing for the Nazis and explaining the fact that they are villains and they are meant to be defeated by the heroes. But this gentleman was flipping through, and I think he wanted to pull Dan's chain a little bit and pointed out that he was a Jew and he wanted to know if, he put down some money, he could be a superhero, and we gladly invited him to do so. He never did come back and pay us for that, but amusingly enough, I did tell that story just last weekend when Dan was down for Anime Week in Atlanta, and somebody took us up on it. So I don't think I have it posted on our website just yet, but we did do a Jewish superhero based on a guy wanted to give it to his friend as a present, so he brought us a picture of the gentleman, and we drew him as a superhero for his friend there. That was kind of fun.
You know, I'm tempted. There's about a dozen Mel Brooks kind of jokes I could make. I'm not going to make any of them, but could you describe the Jewish superhero?
He was pretty much a paragon. Fairly looking, but just with this guy's face and the Star of David on his chest instead of the S.
Okay, that's cool.
And we went with a white and blue color scheme instead of the red, gold, and blue.
Nice, nice. Yeah, I'm reminded of there was a Blaxploitation parody on Comedy Network a few years back called The Hebrew Hammer.
Yes.
Where he had to go out and save Hanukkah from the forces of Christmas, played by Andy Dick.
I've read about it. I haven't seen it.
You're not missing a lot. It's a made for Comedy Central movie, so you know how those are. So, but that's cool.
Yeah, thanks for almost getting us in trouble a bunch.
It is interesting to me. Just in case it needs to be said, Nazis are bad people. My father fought in World War II, so I have an appreciation for the fact that they were dicks. It is strange. I wonder, because I have gotten this reaction a few times as well of, people writing me. I was talking to an artist, because I've danced around doing the World War II stories that I've told in game form in a comic, and I was talking to an artist and I said, I think the perfect place to start the story would be Hitler in prison writing Mein Kampf. When he receives a visit from a mysterious stranger who teleports into a cell and tells him the future. And the guy was like, whoa, Hitler? That's heavy. I mean, I almost wonder, what Jack Kirby would, the reaction, Captain America punching Hitler would get today.
It's kind of fun. But on the same token, it's interesting to see what people are associating with it now, because I live in the South. I don't know where Chuck lives, but I know that Dan's up north, and a lot of my friends are black, and of course with the neo-Nazis you have a whole different group and a whole different focus for the hate in some ways. So it's kind of like there's a whole new group of people who hate Nazis, but they hate Nazis, in present day as opposed to the past. And the imagery kind of connects through. So it's interesting to see how persistently, hated one group can be, especially when they began as a political regime. I mean, more so than some sort of cartoon caricature that they've become. So I don't know. To me, I'm pretty comfortable with the cliches of comic books. But it was just kind of funny because Dan is obviously a little less comfortable than me and jumps to the defense a lot.
But, there was a time, if you remember, there's a Marvel supervillain called the Hate Monger who at one time was literally Adolf Hitler. Hitler never died, and he had this gun that could cause hate. And he was wearing, it was pretty much a KKK outfit, except instead of being in white, it was in black. Right. And that's a character that, everyone in current Marvel continuity seems to have decided to forget ever existed.
I remember back in the 80s or 90s, he wasn't Hitler anymore, but he was still called Hate Monger, didn't he?
The fact that he had ever been Hitler.
That's right. Yeah, they kind of retconned that.
Hey, I'm just looking online while we were talking, and you guys know that Ben Grimm is Jewish?
Yes.
Oh, yes, definitely. Well, Jack Kirby and Joe Simon are both Jewish, and their Captain America cover of him punching Hitler predates our entry into World War II. They drew that and published it in 1940, and they received death threats from Nazi sympathizers in New York.
It was kind of funny because that cover to them was probably even more daring and risque than, say, Inglourious Basterds was today, as much of a Jewish fantasy as that film is, revenge kind of fantasy. That book was so much more daring because of when it came out.
Oh, yeah. Well, prior to Pearl Harbor, you have to remember Charles Lindbergh, our great aviation hero, was a Nazi sympathizer and was meeting personally with Hitler and receiving medals from Hitler and speaking before large crowds, urging Roosevelt to stay out of Europe. So somehow, it was
I don't think that part in the movie.
Yeah, as J. Edgar Hoover used to call people, he said he didn't trust anyone who was a premature anti-fascist. you were a little suspect if you hated the Nazis before Pearl Harbor.
J. Edgar, he was a heck of a guy.
Probably he looked great in fishnet stocking.
Thank you for that visual image, Chuck Rice. I appreciate that. Hey, other Jewish superheroes. Quicksilver.
Wasn't Superman created? Simon and Schuster?
Yes.
Jewish, as I recall. Definitely. And yes. Didn't the guy? And as I recall, the man who created Bruce Wayne, his name is not coming to my mind. Not the Batman, because that was Bob Kane, but somebody else actually created Bruce Wayne, didn't they? And wasn't that guy Jewish?
Was that Bill Finger?
It may have been.
Because Finger was the guy who if someone involved in comics ever tells you he got fingered, it's the worst. It's the worst thing that he could ever tell you, because I know Finger created Robin and Joker.
According to Wikipedia, you're correct. Bill Finger created Bruce Wayne.
Yes, yeah. And he died. He died penniless. He was a contract guy. Bob Kane was paying him a very low page rate, and that was all he got. Whereas Kane, of course, was set for life. He avoided the fate that Siegel and Schuster got with Superman, because he knew the value of what he was creating, because Superman had already exploded, and he was conversant in contract law, and so he was one of those guys like Stan Lee who he got the money.
Yeah, that's a very sad time for some people. I mean, a lot of us as creators look back on that and see it Siegel and Schuster as having been gypped out of so many things. But, some of those guys did make it out of there intact. And it was mainly because of their business savvy more than their artistic skill.
Man, I'm working on RPGs. I got no sympathy for anybody.
Yeah, I know. I feel you, man.
So, yeah, old writing teacher of mine, Troy Hickman, did a book called Common Grounds for Top Cow a few years back. He had a character in there called the Acidic Jew. Which is kind of cool. Hey, getting back on topic. So, Chuck, if I understand correctly, you've got a whole backstory and, literally a whole detailed alternate history you've written up for the superhero version of World War II. Or am I overstating?
The original Vigilance, and then it was first published, I guess you would say that version of Vigilance, was published by Mystic Eye Games as a book called Vigilance Absolute Power. And it contained a timeline going from the 13th century through the year 2000.
Oh, okay. That's cool. Yeah, we're kind of just dribbling it out in dribs and drabs in our Icons releases, but they've been very well received. We are number 3 and 4 on the top 10 at RPG right now, and I don't think we've left the top 10 since we released those two books. So,
yeah, no, Icons is doing really well. Although I'm going to laugh every time anyone says RPG now.
Might not be the best title. But so what do we have coming out next in the World War II line? We've got
Crown Guard is coming out this Monday, and that is the technically you would say it's a British superhero team, but it is primarily British. They also have Canadian, a Canadian member, a Polish member. I wanted to give the team kind of an international flavor. They have a French member, because of course during that time when they were fighting Germany alone, Britain was the home to all of these displaced governments, and we hear a lot about the Free French and Charles de Gaulle, but there were actually more Polish soldiers fighting alongside the British than there were Free French, And I think we also need to remember that the Poles were the ones that created magic that was allowing the Germans to listen in on all the Nazis' coded messages.
Okay, why don't you explain that statement, because you got me confused there.
Magic being the cryptographic box, machine, primitive computer, whatever you would want to call it, that the British were using to decode Nazi messages, that was created by the Polish.
I thought that was called Enigma.
That was a later one, wasn't it?
Yeah, you're correct. Enigma was later. The earliest version, I believe, was called magic.
I have never heard that before.
Yes, the Polish had invented it, and their soldiers, who again, there were more Poles in exile fighting for the British than there were Free French. They smuggled it out at great cost to the French, who of course made no good use of it as they folded like a wet paper bag. But then as the French started to fall, they smuggled it out again, this time to Britain. I very specifically wanted to include a Polish member of the Crown Guard, because they tend to just be forgotten, because of course we walked away from them at the end of World War II and left them to the Soviets.
A lot of people don't remember, I mean, or never learned. I mean, they had the fourth largest force under arms during World War II.
Right.
So, and after the Crown Guard, what's coming after that?
After the Crown Guard, we are going to do we're going to alternate heroes and villains. We're going to do the Japanese, and I am fully content to refer to the Japanese during the World War II period as villains, by the way. Then after that, we're going to do the Soviets, and after that, Public Enemies, which is modern day. So we're going to take a break from World War II. That's my kind of a version of the 10 most wanted of a superhero universe. And then we're going to go back to World War II the week after that with a short adventure that you wrote.
Yeah, that's going to be Blitzkrieg Fab. Sorry. Well, actually, I'm not sure. We've got several short adventures. We've got some that are just short adventures, 10 to 15 pages. And we've got some we're calling battle scenes, which are sort of similar to the Savage Worlds one-pager. It's kind of a fleshed-out adventure hook. You've got a premise, a couple of adversaries, and some suggestions on running it. Most of the battle scenes are going to be about 3 to 5 pages. They'll probably sell those for $1. The adventures are going to be longer, like I say, 10 to 15 pages, maybe longer. And I'm working on a couple of those right now, one called Blitzkrieg London, another one called Ice Palace, which is set at a secret Nazi base in Antarctica. And James, I don't know if you want to talk about it, but I know you were talking about writing a short adventure for this World War II line as well.
Yeah. It's actually based on one of my more successful quick pick adventures that I would pull out when if I hadn't already pulled it on a group, I could pull it out and just throw it in there. It would be a good one adventure, you know, investigation style game that would lead the players to a mysterious villain or not, depending on their investigation skills. But it was more something that I would pull out, like if I, you know, needed to. I tend to try and keep, you know, a little magic bag full of short adventure ideas, because I find them a lot more useful when my players rotate in and out because of schedule conflicts. So it's always nice to have something that I didn't have to have two adventures to lead into, you know, to have a fun story. So, you know, I have a lot of quick, you know, one shots that I tend to lean on. And this is one of them. So this is one of my favorites, but, I'll give you the name. It's a little misleading, but on the same time, it's supposed to be, the Neon Bridge Mystery.
And, oh.
Yeah, that's the title of it. But, we'll get deeper into that once, you know, I'll have some artwork for that soon. I've already sketched up, you know, some characters from it, but I don't want to, you know, put those up until Dan's had a chance to work his magic.
Yeah, you know, actually I was talking to Dan this morning. He was writing a little battle scenes for us that, I was really excited about it. I forget the name he had, but it sounds like it's going to be kind of a mix between Inglourious Basterds and Dirty Dozen with zombies thrown in a World War II setting.
Yeah, he mentioned that. I'm looking forward to that.
That sounds like it'll be a lot of fun.
So, James, you said once Dan works his magic, what is the relationship? You're penciling, and is he inking and coloring? Is that what it is?
Yep. He basically does. Well, here's the fun part. I think he does the hard part, and he thinks I do the hard part. So, but yeah, I pretty much am doing the penciling, and actually, it's still pointing to my DeviantArt account, but if you go to jamesdossie.com, it'll point to our DeviantArt account, and you can see some of the things we've done together. And if you go dial it back far enough, you'll start to see where I'm just doing the pencils. It's not that I don't do the computer coloring, it's just that for me it takes a lot longer than he does. I don't know how he does it, but, you know, I've even seen him work. I've sat next to him as he does it, and he just cranks out these colorful masterpieces in blinding speed, so it kind of boggles my mind. But that's kind of what we kind of hooked up a little bit before Gen Con online and started working together, and we just found it was such a fun combination that we decided to meet up at Gen Con and see where it took us. And, you know, we had some business cards printed up, and that's pretty much how we started. But, I actually have, I think the Nazi werewolf is posted on that gallery, and you can see the full color version of it there. But, was I supposed to say that? Yeah.
That's perfectly fine, yeah. We have Nazi werewolves.
Werewolf is completely racist, man. Come on, this is the 21st century. You can't just throw words like that around.
You have to call them lycanthropes or lycans.
They're lycanthrope Americans, okay?
Werewolf is their word, not your word. You can't use it.
If you use it like that, it sounds like they're kind of an American, but not really. They're like an American.
Oh, God. Damn, James. I'm never inviting you back. That's it. That's terrible. All right. Well, hey, we had a pretty good conversation. Anything else you want to say about the World War II books, Chuck?
They're awesome.
They are super fun to draw the characters for. I kind of wish we had more time to do more art for each one, but, you know, you're getting them out so fast. But they are really fun to do the characters. I like the personalities of the characters a lot.
Yeah, I kind of like the schedule we're on. We're sort of like releasing them every week like they're comics. And heck, you can't even back. Yeah.
It's a great schedule. I mean, you know, if I was the Flash and was able to compress time somehow, but, you know, these guys are really pumping them out.
Yeah, it's like I said, kind of like comics. If you can't buy comics for $2 anymore. So in that way, they're better than comics.
Exactly.
So... anything else you want to talk about while I got you guys here?
Not to steal any thunder from you guys right now, but I mean, we're planning to do some for people who asked or people who are interested. We got such a positive response back on the last time I was on the show for the demo I ran for DC Adventures. We'll definitely be doing some more of that soon. But,
yeah, we're doing a character gen session here in the near future.
Mm-hmm. And that would be followed by some other adventures. But working with you guys has been great. It's been a great fun opportunity. I've got to do a lot more of the stuff I like to do, and that's, you know, monsters and mayhem and, you know, bad guys and stuff like that. And I can't wait to show you that piece that I did the other day.
Oh, I was wondering about that.
I have
cool
stuff to show you, Mike, and I probably should have scanned it before we started the podcast, but oh well, I can't hook it up now or else it'll make me stutter.
Oh, that's all good, man. Hey, did you guys just hear an audio disturbance a few seconds ago, like kind of a commercial sounding thing?
I did not.
Okay, there's an audio pop-up on your DeviantArt page, kind of caught me, so hopefully they didn't make it into the audio feed.
I didn't hear it either. So.
Sweet, okay, just me then. Chuck, anything else you want to pimp or talk about while we're here online?
No, I think that's pretty much it. Except, I guess we can mention, also, recently released, in this, kind of a when it rains it pours time that just released Old School Magic for Osric, which is the system that simulates the greatest role playing game of all time. I think no one has trademarked that yet.
You're talking about Old School Werewolf, right? From World of Darkness?
No, Old School Magic.
Okay.
And also World of Arcara Fractured Realms, which is the latest installment of my ongoing AD&D world.
Okay. And you can find both of those at RPG Now, and if you look under Publishers to Vigilance Press, those are both under our new releases. And Old School Magic is a very affordable $3.50, and World of Arcara is just $3. So can't go wrong. So.
Jason Tondreau for True 20, for Arthur Lives, he also just released an adventure for Arthur Lives, which is Arthurian characters reincarnated in the modern day.
Yeah, that's the best night in the world. We just released that for $4. Yeah, talk a little bit more about Arthur Lives, because I've never been 100% clear on what's going on. Is that like Camelot 3000, or what exactly is that?
It is Camelot 3000 is a big influence on it. It is Arthurian heroes reincarnated in the modern day, but they are reincarnated multiple times. And so if you are Lancelot, there are other Lancelots out there running around. Some of them might be crazy. Some of them basically also got some Highlander mixed in, because each incarnation or reincarnation of the hero wants to be the only one to fulfill his destiny, and so they are trying to wipe each other out while they also try to fulfill their individual kind of, I guess, karmic destinies. They're still repaying for the crimes of the past and trying to get it right.
Wow, that's a really interesting idea. I never, I'm wishing I checked it out now. That's pretty cool. But of course, I still can. It's still out there. So, well, neat. And he's converting that to Savage Worlds in the near future, isn't he?
He is. He is working on that right now. It's an idea. It's his baby, and he has been. It's a project that he's been passionately devoted to for a long time. Jason is—he's also going to do some super stuff for us. He actually did his PhD dissertation on superheroes as modern mythology, I believe. So he knows more about superheroes and Arthur probably than the three of us put together.
Well, I think we should get Jason on the podcast sometime.
That would be awesome.
Oh, cool. All right, well, hey, with the pimpage out of the way, and thanks for the insight into Arthur Lives, because I've been curious about that. I think we're going to call it a podcast. Thanks for your time, guys. We'll see everybody next week, and stay vigilant.